Section 3 of Color Out of Space by Howard Phillips Lovecraft. This Legamos recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Piotr Natter. For over 2 weeks, Amy saw nothing of Nahum, and then, worried about what might have happened, he overcame his fears and paid the Gardner place a visit. There was no smoke from the great chimney, and for a moment the visitor was apprehensive of the worst. The aspect of the whole farm was shocking. Greyish, withered grass and leaves on the ground, vines falling in brittle wreckage from archaic walls and gables, and great, bare trees clawing up the grey November sky with a studied malevolence which Amy could not but feel had come from some subtle change in the tilt of the branches. But Nahum was alive after all. He was weak, and lying on a couch in the low-ceiled kitchen, but perfectly conscious and able to give simple orders to Zenas. The room was deadly cold, and as Amy visibly shivered, the host shouted huskily to Zenas for more wood. Wood indeed was sorely needed, since the cavernous fireplace was unlit and empty, with a cloud of soot blowing about in the chill wind that came down the chimney. Presently, Nahum asked him if the extra wood had made him any more comfortable, and then Amy saw what had happened. The stoutest cord had broken at last, and the hapless farmer's mind was proof against more sorrow. Questioning tactfully, Amy could get no clear data at all about the missing Zenas. "In the well. He lives in the well," was all that the clouded father would say. Then there flashed across the visitor's mind a sudden thought of the mad wife, and he changed his line of inquiry. "Nabi? Why, here she is," was the surprised response of poor Nahum, and Amy soon saw that he must search for himself. Leaving the harmless babbler on the couch, he took the keys from their nail beside the door and climbed the creaking stairs to the attic. It was very close and noisome up there, and no sound could be heard from any direction. Of the four doors in sight, only one was locked, and on this he tried various keys of the ring he had taken. The third key proved the right one, and after some fumbling, Amy threw open the low, wide door. It was quite dark inside, for the window was small and half obscured by the crude wooden bars, and Amy could see nothing at all on the wide planked floor. The stench was beyond enduring, and before proceeding further, he had to retreat to another room and return with his lungs filled with breathable air. When he did enter, he saw something dark in the corner, and upon seeing it more clearly, he screamed outright. While he screamed, he thought a momentary cloud eclipsed the window, and a second later he felt himself brushed as if by some hateful current of vapor. Strange colors danced before his eyes, and had not a present horror numbed him, he would have thought of the globule in the meteor that the geologist's hammer had shattered, and of the morbid vegetation that had sprouted in the spring. As it was, he thought only of the blasphemous monstrosity which confronted him, and which all too clearly had shared the nameless fate of young Thaddeus and the livestock. But the terrible thing about the horror was that it very slowly and perceptibly moved as it continued to crumble. Amy would give me no added particulars of this scene, but the shape in the corner does not reappear in his tale as a moving object. There are things which cannot be mentioned, and what is done in common humanity is sometimes cruelly judged by the law. I gathered that no moving thing was left in that attic room, and that to leave anything capable of motion there would have been a deed so monstrous as to damn any accountable being to eternal torment. Anyone but a stolid farmer would have fainted or gone mad, but Amy walked conscious through that low doorway and locked the accursed secret behind him. There would be Nahum to deal with now. He must be fed and tended, and removed to some place where he could be cared for. Commencing his descent of the dark stairs, Amy heard a thud below him. He even thought a scream had been suddenly choked off, and recalled nervously the clammy vapor which had brushed by him in that frightful room above. What presence had this cry and entry started up? Halted by some vague fear, he heard still further sound below. Indubitably, there was a sort of heavy dragging, and a most detestably sticking noise as of some fiendish and unclean species of suction. With an associative sense goaded to feverish heights, he thought unaccountably of what he had seen upstairs. Good God! What eldritch dream world was this into which he had blundered? He dared move neither backward nor forward, but stood there trembling at the black curve of the Buxton staircase. Every trifle of the scene burned itself into his brain. The sound, the sense of dread expectancy, the darkness, the steepness of the narrow step, and, merciful heaven, the faint but unmistakable luminosity of all the woodwork in sight, steps, sides, exposed laths, and beams alike. Then there burst forth a frantic whinny from Emmy's horse outside, followed at once by a clatter which told of a frenzied runaway. In another moment horse and buggy had gone beyond earshot, leaving the frightened men on the dark stairs to guess what had sent them. But that was not all. There had been another sound out there, a sort of liquid splash, water, it must have been the well. He had left Hero untied near it, and a buggy wheel must have brushed the coping and knocked in a stone. And still the pale phosphorescence glowed in that detestably ancient woodwork. God, how old the house was! Most of it built before 1670, and the gambrel roof no later than 1730. A feeble scratching on the floor downstairs now sounded distinctly, and Emmy's grip tightened on a heavy stick he had picked up in the attic for some purpose. Slowly nerving himself, he finished his descent and walked boldly toward the kitchen. But he did not complete the walk, because what he sought was no longer there. It had come to meet him, and it was still alive after a fashion. Whether it had crawled or whether it had been dragged by an external force, Emmy could not say, but the death had been at it. Everything had happened in the last half hour, but collapse, graying, and disintegration were already far advanced. There was a horrible brittleness, and dry fragments were scaling off. Emmy could not touch it, but looked horrifiedly into the distorted parody that had been a face. "What was it, Nahum? What was it?" he whispered, and the cleft, bulging lips were just able to crackle out a final answer. "Nothing, nothing. The color, it burns. Cold and wet, but it burns. It lived in the well. I seen it. A kind of smoke. Just like the flowers last spring. The well shone at night. Thad and Merwin and Zenas, everything alive. Sucking the life out of everything. In that stone. It must have come in that stone, pisoned the whole place. Don't know what it wants. That round thing the man from the college dug out in the stone. They smashed it. It was the same color, just the same like the flowers and plants. Must have been more of them. Seeds they growed. I seen it the first time this week. Must have got strong on Zenas. He was a big boy, full of life. It beats down your mind and then gets you. Burns you up in the well water. He was right about that. Evil water. Zenas never came back from the well. Can't get away. Draws you. You know, someone's coming, but ain't no use. I seen it time and again since Zenas was took. Where's Nabby, Emmy? My head's no good. Don't know how long since I fed her. It'll get her if we ain't careful. Just the color. Her face is getting to have that color sometimes towards night. And it burns and sucks. It come from some place where things ain't as they's here. One of them professors said so. He was right. Look out, Emmy. It'll do something more. Sucks the light out. But that was all. That which spoke could speak no more because it had completely caved in. Emmy laid a red checkered tablecloth over what was left and reeled out of the back door into the fields. He climbed the slope to the 10-acre pasture and stumbled home by the north road and the woods. He could not pass that well from which his horses had run away. He had looked at it through the window and had seen that no stone was missing from the rim. Then the lurching buggy had not dislodged anything at all. The splash had been something else. Something which went into the well after it had done with poor Nahum. When Emmy reached his house, the horses and buggy had arrived before him and thrown his wife into fits of anxiety. Reassuring her without explanations, he set out at once for Arkham and notified the authorities that the Gardner family was no more. He indulged in no details, but merely told of the deaths of Nahum and Nabby, that of Thaddeus being already known, and mentioned that the cause seemed to be the same strange ailment which had killed the livestock. He also stated that Merwin and Zenas had disappeared. There was considerable questioning at the police station, and in the end Emmy was compelled to take three officers to the Gardner farm, together with the coroner, the medical examiner, and the veterinary who had treated the diseased animals. He went much against his will, for the afternoon was advancing and he feared the fall of night over that accursed place, but it was some comfort to have so many people with him. The six men drove out in a Democrat wagon, following Amy's buggy, and arrived at the pest-ridden farmhouse about 4 o'clock. Used as the officers were to gruesome experiences, not one remained unmoved at what was found in the attic and under the red checkered tablecloth on the floor below. The whole aspect of the farm, with its grey desolation, was terrible enough, but those two crumbling objects were beyond all the bounds. No one could look long at them, and even the medical examiner admitted that there was very little to examine. Specimens could be analyzed, of course, so he busied himself in obtaining them, and here it develops that a very puzzling aftermath occurred at the college laboratory, where the two vials of dust were finally taken. Under the spectroscope, both samples gave off an unknown spectrum, in which many of the baffling bands were precisely like those which the strange meteor had yielded in the previous year. The property of emitting this spectrum vanished in a month, the dust thereafter consisting mainly of alkaline phosphates and carbonates. Emmy would not have told the man about the well if he had thought they meant to do anything then and there. It was getting towards sunset, and he was anxious to be away. But he could not help glancing nervously at the stony curb by the great sweep, and when a detective questioned him, he admitted that Nahum had feared something down there, so much so that he had never even thought of searching it for Merwin or Zenas. After that, nothing would do but that they empty and explore the well immediately, so Emmy had to wait trembling while pail after pail of rain water was hauled up and splashed on the soaking ground outside. The men sniffed in disgust at the fluid, and toward the last held their noses against the fetor they were uncovering. It was not so long a job as they had feared it would be, since the water was phenomenally low. There is no need to speak too exactly of what they found. Merwin and Zenas were both there, in part, though the vestiges were mainly skeletal. There were also a small deer and a large dog in about the same state, and a number of bones of small animals. The ooze and slime at the bottom seemed inexplicably porous and bubbling, and a man who descended on handholds with a long pole found that he could sink the wooden shaft to any depth in the mud of the floor without meeting any solid obstruction. Twilight had now fallen, and lanterns were brought from the house. Then, when it was seen that nothing further could be gained from the well, everyone went indoors and conferred in the ancient sitting room, while the intermittent light of a spectral half-moon played wanly on the grey desolation outside. The men were frankly nonplussed by the entire case, and could find no convincing common element to link the strange vegetable conditions, the unknown disease of livestock and humans, and the unaccountable deaths of Merwin and Zenas in the tainted well. They had heard the common country talk, it is true, but could not believe that anything contrary to natural law had occurred. No doubt the meteor had poisoned the soil, but the illness of persons and animals who had eaten nothing grown in that soil was another matter. Was it the well water? Very possibly. It might be a good idea to analyze it. But what peculiar madness could have made both boys jump into the well? Their deeds were so similar, and the fragments showed that they had both suffered from the grey, brittle death. Why was everything so grey and brittle? It was the coroner, seated near the window overlooking the yard, who first noticed the glow about the well. Night had fully set in, and all the abhorrent ground seemed faintly luminous with more than the fitful moonbeams, and this new glow was something definite and distinct, and appeared to shoot up from the black pit like a softened ray from a searchlight, giving dull reflections in the little ground pools where the water had been emptied. It had a very queer color, and as all the men clustered round the window, Emmy gave a violent start. For this strange beam of ghastly miasma was to him of no unfamiliar hue. He had seen such colors before, and feared to think what it might mean. He had seen it in the nasty brittle globule in that aerolite 2 summers ago, had seen it in the crazy vegetation of the springtime, and had thought he had seen it for an instant that very morning against the small barred window of that terrible attic room where nameless things had happened. It had flashed there a second, and a clammy and hateful current of vapor had brushed past him. And then poor Nahum had been taken by something of that color. He had said so at last, said it was like the globule and the plants. After that had come the runaway in the yard and the splash in the well, and now that well was belching forth to the night a pale insidious beam of that same demoniac tint. It does credit to the alertness of Amy's mind that he puzzled even at that tense moment over a point which was essentially scientific. He could not but wonder at his gleaning of the same impression from a vapor glimpsed in the daytime against a window opening on the morning sky, and from a nocturnal exhalation seen as a phosphorescent mist against the black and blasted landscape. It wasn't right, it was against nature, and he thought of those terrible last words of his stricken friend. It come from some place where things ain't as they is here. One of them professors said so. End of section 3.